Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 22nd, 2014. Rebels of the SPLM in opposition open an office in the Ugandan capital.
We take this opportunity to thank the government of Uganda and its loving people for extensively accepting to maintain its humanitarian corridors.
And reports of heavy fighting over the weekend in oil-producing Upper Nile State.
The final detail of that bottles are 168 dead bodies were counted on the desert in the farms of Ren.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's peace talks have reconvened in Ethiopia today. The latest round of the IGAD-led talks have moved from the Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa to Bahardar, according to IGAD. Among the issues that are being negotiated are a transitional government, issues pertaining to a permanent constitution, transitional security arrangements, and justice, reconciliation, and healing. Representatives from the government, the SPLM in opposition, SPLM leaders or former political detainees, and civil society and faith-based organizations are participating in the negotiations. The talks started without participation of an umbrella group called the Political Parties Leadership Forum, which has been led by Dr. Lamacall. Earlier this month, the forum said they dismissed Dr. Lamacall as their leader. But Dr. Akol, who says he is still in charge of the group, tells us the forum is not taking part in today's talks.
We refuse going to Addis by the government.
And were there reasons why the government is not happy with your presence in Addis?
They did not give any reason. They just said you cannot travel.
The constitution gives every South Sudanese a freedom of movement to go where they want to go.
That's right.
Are you looking at options of addressing this in line with your constitutional rights?
Well, we addressed the president and pointed out this fact. But up to now, he has not responded, so we are still waiting.
What is the future of these talks without the participation of political parties? Because you are representing political parties in the country. What is the future of these talks without the participation of political parties?
Well, of course, if the talks were meant to be inclusive and a multi-stakeholder conference, then, of course, it cannot be as such if some of the bona fide stakeholders are not there. Secondly, the government wants to go around the system by trying to create a delegation from the parties that are in government. The government, by definition, is made up of the parties that are part of the government. So how can the same parties again come and masquerade as opposition parties that deserve to have a separate representation.
Let's put this clear for the purpose of records. So the talks have started in Addis, but the people who are representing political parties there are not actually from your forum. Is that what you're telling me?
No, there is nobody representing the political parties. They were rejected by IGAD because the IGAD told them that, you know, they were not chosen in the presence of IGAD. Our delegation last time was chosen in Addis in the presence of IGAD. So they can testify that it was truly a delegation representing the political parties.
And are you hopeful that the President of the Republic will change his mind and he will travel to Addis Ababa?
Well, of course, you cannot lose hope, but it is now going to the tenth day since we were prevented from traveling and nothing has happened.
That was Lamacall Ajawin speaking to me this past hour from Juba. Anti-government forces led by former Vice President Riek Machar today opened a liaison office in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. The rebels say they will use the office to coordinate diplomatic relations, humanitarian assistance, as well as further peace and reconciliation initiatives in South Sudan. Ugandan troops have been involved in South Sudan's conflict since December and are still in the country, helping the Kiir administration. Bonifacio Taban has more for VOA from Kampala.
The rebels say the opening of the office followed last month's meeting between SPLM in opposition leaders and Ugandan government officials in Kampala. At a new conference in Kampala today, David Otim, the new chief spokesman of the SPLM-SPLA in opposition, thanked the Ugandan government for allowing the rebels to open an office in the Ugandan capitals.
We take this opportunity to thank the government of Uganda and its loving people for extensively accepting to maintain its humanitarian corridors for refugees and internally displaced persons of South Sudan, and respecting her international obligation on responsibility to protect refugees, South Sudanese residents, irrespective of their political affiliations and belief.
Today, OTIMA appealed to the regional and international community to help South Sudan achieve lasting peace by focusing on the root cause of its problem, such as ethnic tension.
Our thanks and appreciation go to the IGAD Partner Forum countries, and in particular USA, Norway, UK, and the European Union. The SPLM avail itself of this opportunity to call upon all our sisters and friendly countries and international community to exert genuine effort that will address the root causes of the conflict.
The rebel have argued that President Salva Kiir is no longer suitable to lead the country and that he should step down, something Mr. Kiir has steadfastly refused to do. In these things, he is the democratic elected leader of South Sudan. OTIM said the armed opposition is fighting for the right of the South Sudanese people, denying it is a political struggle between Mr. Kiir and his former vice president.
This war is for the people of South Sudan. We are actually working very hard even to liberate General Salva Kiir, because stranded with power in Juba, we are trying really to salvage him, tell him that what you are doing is really wrong. You must come to your senses. This country belongs to all of us.
The rebel also criticized Juba's recent directive calling on NGOs and foreign-owned business to fire foreign workers and hire and employ South Sudanese. OTIM called it an immature decision and say it contradicts the government's stated intent to join the regional East African community, which allow free movement of labor among members states. A day after issuing the order, the government issues statement that appear it to be backpedaling, saying not all foreign workers are to be fired. For BOA News, I'm Bonifacio Taban, reporting from Kampala.
From Kampala, we move closer to the border between South Sudan and Uganda. Life in the border region between the two countries is slowly returning to normal after two communities clashed last week. Officials from the two countries met over the weekend and resolved to restore peace in the area after dozens of huts and church were burned down in fighting. But as Lucy Poney reports, the Anglican Bishop of Kajikeji Diocese, Anthony Pogo, says tension will continue to run high unless the two sides finally demarcate the border in the area.
The Kuku community from Kajokeji and the Madi in Moyo fought for days last week after South Sudanese officials detained Ugandan census takers in the disputed Wano area along the border. Bishop Pogo says delegates at the meeting in Moyo on Saturday say the main task before everyone is to immediately stop the fighting. Once that is done, Pogo says,
one of the main resolutions was the idea of expediting the process of the border demarcation. There's a committee that has been prepared to work on that, both from both countries. And the second main resolution is the two armies, except security forces, have agreed to undertake a joint border patrol. I think that's another significant resolution that was reached at. And then, of course, ensuring that there is peace and calm, give a message of hope.
Pogo says the joint security patrol came into force this morning. He says fighting has stopped and people have resumed their daily activities.
Things are much calmer and the situation is returning to normal situation to what it was before. Shops are opened now, and at the border, the joint forces from the two countries are now taking care of the border. The entire boundary, and those people from both sides who are fighting each other have all been told to withdraw.
Pogo says he does not know how many people were killed in last week's fighting, but he says many people were wounded and many more were displaced by the clashes. Pogo is calling on the Kuku and Madi people to embrace each other and coexist.
We want to call upon both sides to maintain peace that is not, at least it has been agreed upon, so that we can go back to the situation that we witnessed at the end of last week, so that we continue to be good neighbors. You know, the Madi and Kuku people have actually been had long-term relationship in terms of neighbors, but also the sort of intermarriages between the two tribes. And so the desire is to go back to that time when we are in good neighborhood.
Pogo says the local population wants peace, but emotions are running high. He says the people are calling on the two governments to verify and demarcate the border as soon as possible to prevent disputes over land in the border area from flaring up into something bigger. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony.
A South Sudan rebel commander loyal to Riek Machar says the only way to end the country's nine-month-old civil war is for President Kiir to step down. Brigadier General Gadruak Riek Jack says Mr. Kiir has lost legitimacy. His comment comes as the regional bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, sponsor of South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia, calls on both sides to engage in serious negotiations this week. General Jack tells VOA James Batty the government has never been willing to give peace a chance.
I think we in the opposition made it very clear. For the solution of this conflict, we demanded Salva Kiir has killed people and he has to resign. That is the only way when this conflict has to stop.
So do you believe there's a military solution?
I don't think there is any military solution, but there has to be a sign of willingness. So we are seeing Salva Kiir is not willing to bring peace in South Sudan.
Would your group, the rebels, welcome an interim government?
I think you have heard from President Salva Kiir himself when he said there is a red line. So we don't see any reason when the president is talking of red line. How do you bring peace when you take this position? It is a red line. So we are seeing Salva Kiir is not ready for peace.
If there is an interim government, would you welcome President Salva Kiir as part of that interim government?
Yeah, that is interim government minus him. That is welcome. But with him, I don't think he's the best option.
Why do you hold that position when he is the elected president?
But he lost his legitimacy. It's no longer elected government.
General, tell me, who is supporting your forces? Where do you get your weapons?
We get the weapon from himself, Salva Kiir. We just get the weapon from the battlefield.
How true is it that your group is getting support from Khartoum?
No. That is a lie. We don't get any support from anywhere. But we get support from the people whom he sent to fight us.
You know, we have these continuing peace talks that are going on in Addis Ababa. Do you think those talks can ever be successful to bring peace to the people of South Sudan?
We said if Salva Kiir is honest to this peace talk in Addis Ababa, yes, peace can be brought. But Salva Kiir and his team in Juba are not serious.
Are you serious, the rebels?
Yes, we are serious to bring peace in South Sudan.
How do you demonstrate that? By compromising?
Well, the question of compromise is when you see the face of the other side is willing for the peace. You may have heard of, they also bar the chairman of the opposition. So you see what they are doing now, they are not willing to bring peace in South Sudan. They are too dictatorial.
Generally, there are those who say that either you, the rebels, or the government in Juba are not putting enough effort into bringing peace because they say that you all are enjoying yourself. What do you say to that?
For us, we are willing on our side, but the Juba faction is not willing.
But Juba will say the same thing about you.
So they are lying if they say the same thing.
That's Brigadier General Gadkuat Riek Jack, a rebel commander of the SPLM-IN opposition, speaking to VOA's James Batty. South Sudan's military claims to have killed more than 160 rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar during clashes in Upper Nile State's Reng town over the weekend, a claim that could not be independently confirmed by people on the ground in the region. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu filed this report from Juba.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer told the reporters at a news conference in Juba today that the fighting occurred on Saturday following several earlier clashes last week. He accuses the rebels of launching the first attack on government positions in Renk and Payuer villages in Upper Nile State.
The final detail of that battles are 168 dead bodies were counted on the desert in the farms of Reng, northeast of Reng, and 54 AKM were captured, 26 machine gun or PKM are captured, 4 captured alive from the rebels, we can call them prisoners of war, and the SPLA now He is in full control of the areas of Reung and areas of Payuer.
Upper Nile State's acting information minister, Gatluak Lipoth, says the rebels began attacking government positions in Reung town late Saturday morning.
They attacked it in three directions. One direction is from northeast Reung, another direction from south, another direction is from west. They were making shelling because they didn't cross the river.
Aguer says 11 government soldiers were killed and 59 others wounded during the fighting. He also accused the rebels of killing a paramount chief and four of his children. Aguer says despite signing the cessation of hostilities agreement, Machar is intending on capturing the Upper Nile region because of its strategic importance. He says intelligence officials have known about the plan for some time now.
This plan was to start with attacks to all of Reung, Malut, Oilfield, Malakal, Bentiu, Pariang, Mayom, Abionum, and Ayut. This plan, we received it, the SPLA command received it a month ago, and the SPLA had been preparing to counteract that plan. And indeed, it started to be implemented on the 17th of this month.
Both sides are accused of violating the cessation of hostilities agreement signed in January this year and recommitted to in May. Meantime, international humanitarian aid agencies operating in the region say insecurity is getting worse in Reung and the surrounding areas. Wendy Van Amorigen, a spokesperson for MEDEA, which provides water and sanitation services, among others in Reung, says her organization evacuated some of its staff today due to the escalating violence in the region.
Our team has been hibernating amidst the fighting, and as the heavy fighting, such as shelling and gunfire in Reung, continued and was putting our staff lives at risk, we reduced our staff in Reung today with the help of Mission Aviation Fellowship.
Amorigen says more civilians are fleeing their homes and seeking the help of aid agencies like MEDEA, and Reung is practically deserted. Amorigen confirmed heavy fighting occurred over the weekend in Reung and surrounding areas. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the U.S., Britain, Norway welcome statement from Sudan about democratic reforms, but say more must be done. That story is coming up next.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does religion affect your daily life?
Okay, me personally, I'm a Christian, so religion is like a guideline for me for my everyday life. Whatever I want to do, I will think of what God is saying in the Bible.
In fact, I would like to tell you that I'm not religious. In fact, let me say like this. When I was young, those years, when I was still 7, 8 there, I used to go to church, but later, I just dropped. And have no traditional belief as well.
You know, religion, when you're in a religion, it's like you get support from your fellow members of the region. Whether you're a Christian or a Muslim, you always get support from them. It's support from prayers, and even family or friendship support. So religion is something that is good.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Speakers of the legislative assemblies in South Sudan's 10 states are meeting in Juba to discuss how to unite the country and set up a national recovery efforts. Vice President James Waniga opened the annual Speakers Forum with a plea to officials to come up with recommendations on how diverse communities can peacefully coexist and repair the damage done to the country by 8 months of fighting. For VOA News, Philip Thornaleu reports from Juba.
Wani says peace has to come from within South Sudan and is calling on local and state leaders to work closely with their communities to end the fighting once and for all.
Consult the people. In my recent visits to some of the states, I could see that our people are hopeful and they are aspiring and thirsty for peace. However, instead of making peace from within, in their families, communities, and states, peace is being expected from Addis Ababa. That will be misleading. We have to do something that can contribute to Addis Ababa. So we have to seriously exert effort internally.
Wani says, for lasting peace to be achieved, a dialogue has to be started at the grassroots. It has to be led by community leaders and not national politicians, he says. He says, because state lawmakers are very close to the people, they could turn the mistrust and suspicion that the conflict has created in communities into respect and unity. Wani says some lawmakers are already working closely with their communities to restore peace.
The state's parliaments play a big role in sensitizing and keeping together our communities during this difficult moment of our crisis. You have managed to keep our people united, and that is our number one mission. It is number one mission and vision of this forum. Peaceful coexistence cannot be less than anything. It is first and foremost.
The theme of this year's forum is national unity and recovery towards strengthening legislative assemblies. Manasseh Magog-Rundial, the Speaker of the National Parliament, says the gathering has come at the right time. He warned lawmakers that if nothing is done to stop the fighting, South Sudan could be irreparably damaged. It is up to them to avoid that, he says.
The war has badly tarnished our image as well as the image of our country. The country threatens to go down the drain should the war continue to drag on. We therefore need to salvage the situation before it is too late.
Magog says the efforts by mediators from the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, and the international community should be followed with concrete actions by South Sudanese leaders. He says delivering services to the people will be a major step towards restoring hope and peace. He says lawmakers have to put the people first.
We in the parliament should not entertain corruption and should have zero tolerance for it. Corruption should be weeded out in all its forms wherever it exists. Those found involved and practicing it should be brought to books and be severely punished.
The forum is being held in Juba at the sixth round of peace talks led by IGAD kick off today. The main task facing government and rebel negotiators at the talks is to agree to the makeup of a transitional government of national unity. For VOA News, I am Philip Thornaleu in Juba.
We now move to Sudan. Sudan seems to be moving toward breaking a months-long stalemate over a national dialogue that will bring together the government, political parties, and rebel groups in effort to end the fighting in Darfur and southern Kordofan. But as VOA fellow Nabil Biagio reports, the U.S. and other Western nations say Sudan must do more to prove it's transitioning into a democratic style of government.
The U.S. Department of State, the U.K., and Norway recently released a joint statement welcoming moves by the African Union Security Council and former South African President Thabo Mbeki to engage the Sudanese government, opposition parties, and rebel forces to resolve the country's crisis. The statement outlines what it calls basic principles for meaningful governance reform and lasting resolution of the conflicts in Sudan, a process the three countries, or the Troika, say must include a national dialogue.
What they're trying to do here is to be clear on what they see as the minimum standards for what a genuine, inclusive national dialogue process looks like.
That's John Temin, Director of Africa Programs for the United States Institute of Peace. The AU's Peace and Security Council previously urged the government to build confidence with opposition parties by releasing all political prisoners and allowing public liberties. Last week saw the release of the leader of the Sudanese Congress Party, Ibrahim Asheikh, and the release of Mariam El-Mahdi, the deputy chairman of Sudan's opposition Umma Party, and a few other political detainees in Sudan. But Temin says the Khartoum regime is sending mixed signals about its willingness to allow political freedom.
Those sorts of releases of political prisoners happen, but also more newspapers continue to be harassed. So it's this real ebb and flow. But I think part of what the Troika statement tries to make clear is how important the conducive environment is to a genuine national dialogue process. And part of a conducive environment is freedom for people to speak and not arresting political prisoners.
Sudanese political analyst Haj Hamad says the regime in Khartoum must be careful because it no longer has the capacity to continue waging wars against rebel groups in Darfur and southern Kurdistan.
For the first time now, they have a very weak economy, a quite isolated type of an economy from or international financial institutions, as well as from regional financial institutions. Saudi Arabia, Arab Gulf countries already boycotted this economy.
Hamad says rebel groups fighting the Khartoum government in Darfur and southern Kurdistan also must be willing to make some concessions.
They are also tired and isolated, especially after what happened in southern Sudan. They lost their major retreat area over there. And it has become quite unsensitive situation in the south, which is also compelling for these armed groups to accept a kind of a peace arrangement.
President Omar al-Bashir announced the national dialogue process in January. At the time, Mr. Bashir promised to work with opposition political parties and rebel groups to achieve peace and transform Sudan into a democracy, but not much has happened since then. Opposition parties in Sudan are demanding an immediate end to the frequent bombardment of civilian villages in Darfur and southern Kurdistan. They're also calling for the dissolution of Bashir's government in order for an all-party transitional government to be formed ahead of national elections, which are scheduled to take place in 2015. In 2009, Mr. Bashir was indicted by the International Criminal Court on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity in Darfur, and issued a second arrest warrant in 2010. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
That report by Nabil Biagio brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Exodus by Bob Marley and the Wailers. We have been listening to Bob Marley and the Wailers with the song Exodus. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.